I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Rick Antonsen joins me again. His latest book, Route 66 Still Kicks, Driving America's Main Street, was recently published. It's an informative travelogue that sees his buddy Peter and him travel the nearly 4,000 kilometers that was the famed Route 66, colloquially known as Mother Road or the Main Street of America. From Chicago, Illinois to Los Angeles, California, through eight states, Rick and Peter drive what's left of the route. And in this book, we're given a view onto American history, politics, culture, food, and more. It's a fascinating book and also quite an engrossing trip this pair takes. We'll get Mr. Antonsen to tell us about why this all came about, what he's learned about traveling by car with a friend, and America in the process. Rick Antonsen is the president and CEO of Tourism Vancouver, and his previous book was To Timbuktu for a Haircut, which he was on this program with in 2008. He also wrote co-wrote Slumax Gold. This book, this new book, is published by Dundurn. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Rick Antonsen. Mr. Antonsen, good morning.
Thank you very much for having me back, Joe.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. So have you and Peter, and I guess for people that don't know, Peter Armstrong, who's a businessman in this part of the world, your friends. Have you guys traveled much together?
Well, we've been buddies for a long time and had lots of sort of work associations over the years. And our first real sort of long trip together was maybe 4 or 5 years back, maybe before we went on Route 66. And we spent a week together, the two of us and a guide in Libya, and a week together in Algeria. And then we were looking for something else to do, and Peter's suggestion was something closer to home. He said, what about Route 66? And we jumped at it, not really knowing much about where it went.
Yeah, I guess the only way we'd know about it is through the song. And remember Nat King Cole's version of the song, of course, and then the TV show.
Well, the TV show from 1960 to 1964 had 116 episodes, and curiously enough, because everybody would tune in weekly and expect to see this adventure along Route 66, only two of the episodes were filmed on Route 66. They went to over 80 U.S. communities and over 20 U.S. states, and in fact, two of the episodes of the Route 66 television show were actually filmed in Canada, one in Toronto, one in Niagara Falls.
Really? Yeah. So this Route 66 was, commissioned in 1926, and it was decommissioned in 1985. It has, beyond being a thoroughfare for Americans and travelers, it had this sort of mystique that no other highway, I guess, or stretch of road has had in America, hasn't it?
Well, it's been called the most famous highway in the world, and part of that is, you know, the song, the Bobby Troop song, mm-hmm. that Nat King Cole recorded in 1946, and then it's had 100 other variations with artists, including, you know, Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones on their first album. So it's that got it a lot of popularity. John Steinbeck, in his book The Grapes of Wrath, and he wrote about the Dust Bowl years and the migrants making their way to California and leaving just the terribly difficult times, and in that case, leaving Oklahoma. So a number of things that John Ford filmed, they've all ratcheted up this. It's fair to say that Route 66 is on a par with the Alamo in terms of the American mystique and myth-making. And modern day, you can still travel maybe 90%, 85-90% of old Route 66. You have to work at it, and that became our quest.
The cover of the book has a picture of the Mustang that you and Peter rented. I guess it's stuck in mud. Where was this?
We were stuck in the mud, and Peter captured the image of it. We're on an old alignment of Route 66, one that never got paved. So we're in Oklahoma. This 7-mile stretch was part of the original Route 66 in 1926, and by 1933 it had been abandoned or bypassed, which often happened. The Route 66, as one can imagine, in any growing community, let alone a whole big swath of a country that was rapidly developing, it would shift as the main road around the towns as there was expansion or new alignments came into effect. We found this one, and Peter had said, let's go on all the old parts, all the abandoned, the neglected, the remnant parts of Route 66. So we went on this, and it had rained the night before. And after about 4 miles and a couple of hours of slipping and sliding and not seeing another person, we ground to a halt. And that's the photograph on the cover of the book.
And some of the, this was what I found fascinating, is you talk about, parts of the route being bypassed, parts of it. It changes over the years, doesn't it? That some of it was in brick, some of it was in wood, right?
Well, and along with the brick and the wood, there'd be gravel, there would be dirt, there would be Portland cement, and then eventually tarmac. There would be various ways of paving it, depending on often the local economy. There's another place just outside of Commerce in Oklahoma where Mickey Mantle grew up along Route 66 and playing baseball in all those communities. There's a place there called the Sidewalk Highway, and it's an 18-mile stretch. They had enough money to pave 9 miles, so what they did was, instead of paving 2 lanes 9 miles, they paved 1 lane, sidewalk width almost, down the center of the road for all 18 miles. Lots of things like that, and of course, a great deal of pavement politics, as there is all over North America, that defined where Route 66 would go, where it would bypass, and where it wouldn't go.
And then we also get a sense of the impact of the route going through, say, a community, a small town.
Well, and today, many of the towns that once were thriving are ghost towns, and the economy sometimes would shift away from them, along with the highway shifting away from them, and there was a saying that some of these communities had been 66th. You know, they once were good because of the highway, much like the railway coming to town, and then if you're on the wrong side of the tracks or you miss out on the highway, it shifts away. But the drives today can be quite remarkable, and good services along much of it, but we would also drive some days for a couple of hours without seeing another vehicle if we were on a old back section of Route 66. But it's still the most admired road trip out there for people that are roadies.
You mentioned the railroad. Now, Peter's in the train business.
Yes.
There was a connection to Cornelius Van Horn, the president of CN.
You know, we were surprised to find out that Van Horn is in fact from Joliet, which is in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And we were in the town at a museum and came across information that he was buried there. And of course, had grown up as a railway telegraph worker, and then came here to build Canada's national dream later on in his career, and probably one of the most famous and accomplished railroaders in North America.
You got to meet people like not meet them per se, but you got to, Lincoln, Mickey Mantle, you mentioned earlier, along this route, along this trip, right?
Well, there are so many people that have contributed to the awareness of Route 66. Out of Route 66 having contributed to their development, whether it's Will Rogers, who was a young entertainer, a rodeo performer along the route, and then of course became probably the most famous broadcaster the U.S. ever had, and was the largest box office draw for a male movie star, and was, you know, he had come out of the Route 66, Oklahoma, that whole sense of place, and was just apparently a wonderful individual. And Woody Guthrie once said that he traveled Route 66 so often that he could crack it up to 6666, and he wrote many songs and traveled with migrants and workers and bindle stiffs, and he would pick up their songs and convey them so well to the rest of the world about the hardship, the difficulties they were facing.
Didn't they name it the Will Rogers Highway at one point?
They have. It's co-designated Route 66 and the Will Rogers Highway. They did that after he had been killed in an airplane crash in Alaska, and it was a number of years later. The signage is sporadic, but it's official, and at the end in California, there's a plaque in the park, Capelsi Park, and it talks about it right there as you come up against the water to the dock area. And it's prominent in a couple of states and then periodically signed in others.
So this car that you rented, it's a Ford Mustang, right?
It was a Ford Mustang 2009, so 45th anniversary edition. Fortunately, it was a V8, and off we went, and it was great. We looked at trying to replicate the old Corvette from the TV series, but this was higher, which served us well because we ended up on a lot of dirt roads, back roads, and there are parts where the original Route 66 is now not just bypassed, but it's got, you know, weeds growing up, and there are places where it's overgrown man-sized trees up and cracked through the pavement. We tried to get on as many drivable parts as possible.
And so what's the day like for you and Peter? Do you drive all day? How does that work?
You know, our one obligation when we met up in Chicago was that in a couple of weeks we had a flight time out of L.A. That was it. So we'd do whatever would strike us with the day. One night it was about 10 o'clock at night, pouring rain, and Peter, who can get a bit fixated on things, was absolutely adamant that we find this other old section of Route 66. So in the dark, we're skulking around in this rainy, pounding down road looking for it. So some nights would end like that. Other mornings we'd be up fairly early and driving, and then you'd have a glistening day with the top down and the sun beaming, and you'd be on maybe a, you know, 20, 30-mile stretch of old Route 66 that was gravel, and you're away from everyone, and it's just a different kind of loneliness.
And the food along the way, was that any good?
The food was tremendous. Now, I have to say that you go with a certain attitude. Part of our attitude was that we would not order the same thing twice. So right. We were going to have a wide variety of meals, but we ended up in almost countless diners, and you would, that's where the most interesting people were, because the locals would talk to you, and they were terrific with their stories, their sense of an America that's not as lost as we might think it is. And these were individuals who would talk about the economy, they would talk about their own lives, and whether they were a waitress or someone else sitting there with us, or sometimes other travelers. Part of Route 66 and the appeal today is that 5 interstates now bypass it. So the freeways, Highway 40 is a big one. They scoot you right by it. So you can go from Chicago to L.A. in 3 days. You just got to get up every morning and chase pavement. Our goal was to get up every morning. We had about 3 or 4 guidebooks and half a dozen different maps, and we just tried to find out where we could go, because some parts of it would be on one map and not mentioned on another, and we wanted to find all these old and abandoned portions.
Now, you managed to find bookshops along the way, I understand, as well.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's one old bookshop. Well, it was an old service station on an alignment that we were going on in, I think it was in Missouri, and this place had been converted into a bookstore, and then sort of neglected. And I tried to get in. I tried to get in the front, tried to get in the back, just thinking one of the doors might be open, and it was... Just, you could see the books, you could see the old books, you could see the shelves that have fallen down, you could see the insulation that have come out of the roof, and the sort of the sag from some of the dampness, which was really a shame. And while we were doing that, Peter went over to meet with a fellow who turned out to be a little bit of a local landlord. We're really quite out of the way at this time. There's a bit of a fire going on in a pit in the guy's yard, and he comes out with his rifle and talks to Peter, and so I abandoned my attempts to get into the bookstore.
In terms of what you guys listen to on the trip, you're in a car driving for, you know, long stretches of time. Do you listen to the radio, or do you have music, or how does that work?
We had a bit of radio, but our main thing was, we said, look, we're not going to take any music. We'll just listen to what we pick up. Uh-huh. And so the, you know, first night we're in a jazz place, and it was some like Brazilian jazz music, which was not exactly what we thought we'd have on the road. And then we found some country and western, played that for a while, but we struck gold with finding some Route 66 related tunes, highway tunes, and many of them about the history of the road. I would say 80% of them were ones that we had never heard, but they'd be from bands like the Red Dirt Rangers or some of the others that were they wrote locally, and they'd been recorded, and they were great. And there'd be some Woody Guthrie songs, you know, the Route 66 blues, which Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie wrote, and there'd be renditions of that by others, and so that was terrific. Some of the songs by, you know, maybe better known performers like Asleep at the Wheel, who would do a rendition of Albuquerque and all of those, and so you kind of felt in a bit of a 1950s time travel, yeah, with the music, even if it was more modern in its recording date. So we played that and replayed that, and we learned all the words to a whole bunch of songs we didn't know about until we were on Route 66.
Do you mind me asking how much a trip like this costs?
You know, why I don't mind at all the question. Well, we had the car rental. I don't know the exact amount, but we had the cost of the car, 2 weeks rental, and a bit of an extra stipend to drop it off in L.A., which we did in good shape, all cleaned up, actually liquids topped up and everything else. Yeah. We had the overnight accommodation, and actually it's, you know, Peter every night negotiated just because that's the kind of guy he enjoyed it. It's the hunt, not the catch, right? It's sport for him. He would negotiate the rates, save a couple of bucks here, $4 there. But we paid anywhere from, $26 a night up to, maybe $50 a night. One night we stayed in an old miner shack, a 100-year-old place, because we were in Oatman in Arizona. There is no accommodation. Our car was giving us trouble, and the lady who ran the saloon phoned somebody who she knew might let us stay at this old shack they own, so we got in there. So you've got that, and then your food. It's just it's road food, and it wasn't overly expensive. I think we maybe had one fancy dinner, and I don't care much where I sleep when I'm on a road trip like that. And Peter, who does, actually ended up sleeping a lot of strange places and felt just good about it. But it was always affordable. We would just stop when we felt like stopping for food, or at night we didn't have any pre-planned destination for either food or stay.
And I guess you guys set out at the beginning some ground rules. And, a trip like this, it could end friendships for some people, don't you think?
Well, the road trips are like marriages. They're a lot about compromise. And Peter and I are, as I mentioned, long-standing friends. But we're also like chalk and cheese. We're quite different politically. We're different in lifestyles. We're different in a lot of our interests. And that actually adds a lot, I think, to a trip, because when you've got someone else with different opinions, you then challenge your own prejudgments and your own thoughts, because we actually were traveling. I don't convey this in the book, but we actually were traveling during 2008 in October, so it was the election. Right. And we're in Arizona, which is McCain country, and I'm wearing a Obama Biden t-shirt, and you end up with encounters and conversations that were different because of that. Yeah. And while that might influence a bit of the tone of some of my writing, some of the interests, I don't talk specifically because it would date the book. But it's good to travel with somebody who's different but similar. We've both got a lot of shared interests in either the music we were learning or the history we're learning, or Peter really enjoys meeting people. I enjoy meeting people, and he would, in 2 minutes of meeting someone, know half their life story, and that was rich.
Does he like the book?
Does Peter like the book?
Yeah.
He does. He did not know that I was going to write about it. I didn't know. I'm a note taker. He's a photographer. So he had 2,000 photographs, and I had lots of sketch notes from at night or from, when we were driving and stuff like that. Not a journal, but just sketch notes. And he did not have a clue that I was writing about the book until 8 months after we were back. And one Sunday night, we were out for dinner and talking about stuff. And I said, hey, come on back to my place. I got something I should show you. And I had the sort of chapters outlined, about a dozen chapters and stacks, and I at that point maybe had 50,000 words written, because it was when I got back that I sat and I would write. So he was absolutely surprised about it, and he's been very supportive and encouraging, and he's a good sport. Certainly, I wrote the book, so I don't miss any opportunities to take the mick out of him, as it were, and poke some fun. But he's got some great lines, which are ones he actually said towards the end of the trip. We're struggling through a car overheating on the Oatman Pass, where we have no business being in the dark, and nobody wants to be on there because it's a bad mountain highway, and there's no one else around. And at one point he says to me, I'd find it odd if other people thought you were fun to travel with. So he, there's that yeah, between the two of us. Yeah. But he's been really encouraging, and I showed him iterations of the manuscript all the way along, and the only thing he asked was that I put in the acknowledgments a line that says two guys took this trip, only one of them wrote the book.
Would you travel with them again?
Oh yeah. We're we're good travel companions, and we sort everything out. We had came up as our 5 second rule, because early on, day one, I think he was on about something, and I said to him, you know, there's nothing in our relationship that couldn't be cured if you had a 5 second pause button. So that gave us our 5 second rule, which was if anybody was getting on the other guy's nerve, you could just say 5 seconds and you know, just cut it out. It was just sort of common. So that worked really well. And then we developed a 10-second rule, which is if you want to go somewhere or somebody suggests you go someplace, if you don't respond within 10 seconds, forget about it forever. Like, don't start whinging about it, yeah, you know, an hour later. So those things served us, and we came up with what I think Peter called it the 25-year rule, so that we didn't worry about who was picking up lunch or gassing up the car. We just said, look, you know, do what we do and pay when we pay, and in 25 years we'll be even.
Yeah. Where would you guys go next? Or have you guys planned something?
We've talked about Saudi Arabia as a trip, and we've done some work on that, but it's a troubled time in that part of the world. Before we went to Route 66, we were talking about going. A friend of ours is doing some work in the sort of way offbeat areas in Laos and Cambodia, and so that was one of our possibilities. So we do look at it. Whatever it will be, it will not be normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you probably get another book out of it, don't you think?
Well, I have a contract with Dundurn Publishing in Toronto for two more books. My next book is to be on a trip that I took a year and some ago. I joined an expedition to the summit of Mount Ararat in eastern Turkey, and while there had a serendipitous opportunity to travel some in Iraq and then back into Turkey and then on train into Iran. So that's a book that I want to write. I've done a lot of research, and the travel narrative side of it was really interesting. So that'll be strong. And a New York publisher, Skyhorse, a New York publisher, took the U.S. rights to Route 66, which was great.
Yeah.
And so they've released it there this month, which has been quite exciting. And they then came back and took the U.S. rights to the book To Timbuktu for Haircut, A Journey Through West Africa, which you and I talked about when it came out, as you mentioned. And so they're releasing that in the U.S. in an updated additional information piece in spring of 2013. So there's lots to do, and you know, my main life, I've got the job that is just a great job, and that's got to be my priority. So finding time to write is something I can do on the side.
Well, what's the to talk about your day job, to talk about tourism in Vancouver, what's the state of the business like for you guys? I mean, we've been pretty good over the last couple of years, haven't we?
Yeah, you know, we came out of the Olympic year with a lot of good stuff the rest of that year. But the Olympic sort of international media spotlight fades quite quickly. You know, the world moves on to other places. But the afterglow was pretty good in 2011 as well. The expansion of the convention center has been very successful and has had a lot of meetings that could come only because we had the additional size and capability. Some that have come have already, much to our happiness and the folks at the Vancouver Convention Center, and some of these conferences, larger ones, have rebooked to come back, and that'll be good. 2015 is shaping up to be a very good year, and we think the 2015 to 2020 period will have some things going for it that right now the world of travel doesn't have going for it, and that's a lack of consumer confidence in the United States and a slow economy there. Canadians, who are a big part of our market, can now, with the exchange rate, afford to travel a lot of different places. Europe is in, as a source market, a bit troubled. So while we've got that, it's always important to remind ourselves that Vancouver is the healthy destination at a time when there are lots of other destinations really struggling. And that's important because, you know, Vancouver is sort of one of the main gateways for the province of BC, and you know, one of the main reasons people come to visit Vancouver is to leave us, because we've got the world's best backyard. So we've got lots going for us, and even when, you know, the economy's a bit soft, we will work through these years and have good tourism.
Rick, I've enjoyed this book and the conversation today. Continued good luck with the book.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. The book is called Route 66 Still Kicks, Driving America's Main Street. It's published by Dundurn. Its author, Rick Antonsen, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.